Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, over in DeKalb County, they'll soon require convenience stores and so-called high-risk businesses to have surveillance cameras. Now, Commissioner Lorraine Cochran-Johnson details the need for this ordinance. Also, there's a new film fellowship launching for students attending the Atlanta University Center institutions. Now, I'll speak with officials behind the fellowship, and we'll hear how one legendary filmmaker is involved.
Spike Lee has put more African Americans to work in this business than anyone else in the history of this business.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, that's just ahead, but first this. Following the release of the video footage capturing the beating of Tyre Nichols, which led to his death, a Georgia lawmaker wants to prevent the same thing from happening here in our state. Georgia House Minority Leader James Beverly, a Democrat, said George Floyd, Eric Garner, and Tyre Nichols deserve to make it home.
But they didn't. Their fate was in the hands of officers who pledged to provide safety and stability to our communities. Their culture ate this man's life for dinner.
Now, Beverly wants fellow lawmakers to take preventive steps through legislation, saying it might not change minds within law enforcement, but it would require restraint.
The Georgia House of Representatives will not stand idly by while injustice prevails. So I'm calling on this House, the Georgia House of Representatives in general, and the Georgia House Democratic Caucus specifically, to hold hearings to pass legislation so that this tragedy does not come to our state.
And a programming note, House Minority Leader James Beverly will join tomorrow's Closer Look, and we'll pick up the discussion on this and the Democratic agenda for this year's legislative session. Now, coming up in a moment, we'll get more news from the state capitol. You're listening to Closer Look. And Closer Look continues now from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. It is business as usual for state lawmakers today, and especially since there are still committee hearings as agency and department heads make their needs heard. Let's head downtown to where WABE politics reporter Raul Bali is live from the Georgia House Chambers. Welcome, Raul.
Hey, Rose.
You all are all busy, not just you, but a lot of our WABE reporters are tackling a lot.
It's a busy day when it comes to state politics. Actually, a couple of my fellow reporters are in here right now. Sam Greenglass is about to walk out the door to go cover a governor's event. Emily Pearson is here. She's about to head over to City Hall for an event. She was here for an Asian American event. And we've had other reporters out covering a lot of things with state. It's a busy day for things around state government today.
Yeah, and a little bit later we'll hear from First Lady Marty Kemp. I believe Dormia Vance is with that. Those mm-hmm. efforts at the airport as it relates to trafficking. Martha Dalton, of course, is, I believe, covering a literacy hearing. Yep. And Jess Medor, who's covering Mental Health Day. So y'all are busy, and of course we appreciate it.
And we have Matthew Pearson here too, our photographer, who's taking amazing photos for our social media and our website.
Amazing photos. They're amazing.
Yes. I mean, compared to what I can do with a camera, nah, it's not even close.
Let's start here, Raul. Governor Brian Kemp has started pushing some bills for lawmakers to take on this session. What are you hearing mm-hmm. so far?
So his floor leader, so the governor doesn't file bills directly. It's mm-hmm. his floor leaders. And by my count, I've got 7 bills here kind of dropped here in the past 24 and 48 hours. And there's a lot to look at. One of the bills that jumped out at me is House Bill 129. It was filed by one of his floor leaders, Republican State Representative Sue Hong from Lawrenceville. And it deals with a program called TANF, temporary assistance for needy families. It's a federal program that is implemented here in the state of Georgia by DFACS, and it, you know, gives cash assistance to families with young children, low-income families. And what this legislation would do is it would expand the eligibility criteria to include pregnant women. And I just talked to Representative Hong, and one of the important things, it's not written in the bill, but one of the important things is once that pregnant woman has a baby, she's not going to have to file any more new paperwork. She'll just continue, because if she's going to be eligible under that criteria as a pregnant woman, most likely they'll be continue to be once they've had the child. So that's one of the bills that's been filed.
And Raul, for our listeners who may not be aware, take them through the likelihood of when a governor is pushing a measure that's, you know, important to him, obviously, or to the administration. How likely is it for that measure to obviously get a vote and then become law?
If it's not truly controversial, you know, it's very high. And when you look at a bill like this, you would expect it to go through. The other thing I do look is I look at other names on the bill. Obviously, having a governor's floor leader on the bill is always important, but you see if other important lawmakers are on that bill. So I would always say, yeah, it's a high likelihood that bill, you know, is going to get through and get done. You know, the second signer on that bill is State Representative Sharon Cooper, who's over from Cobb County, and she's a leading voice on these maternal issues. So
she's also a doctor, correct? She a physician?
She is a nurse.
Nurse. Okay.
So when I see her name, that tells me this is a piece of legislation that's going to get serious consideration and likely get back to the governor's desk.
And Raul, we're on the last day of the first month here. What are lawmakers really doing this month? We'll get to some of the issues with the budget, but this month is sort of getting those measures out, making sure you can get people on board before the fun starts when all the debating begins.
So yesterday was kind of a big day because I think we had close to 100 bills filed on both sides. That was the first kind of big day where there were just tons of bills to keep flipping through and try to figure out what's been filed. There are more than, and I think I've mentioned this on the air before, there have been more than 1,000 bills, if not more, that have been drafted, and you're just waiting for them to be filed. So, and the other thing is we're starting to see movement on the state budget as well.
Let me ask you this, with those 1,000 bills, my goodness, will all of them require some type of committee hearing, or depending on the measure, you can bypass that?
It's rare for a bill to completely bypass the full committee. Sometimes you can send it straight to rules and get it done quickly. You know, certain resolutions, those bills, as I mentioned, 1,000, some of them are just, you know, honoring, you know, oh, a perfect example. There's a resolution to, it's either a bill or resolution for Georgia to recognize Kimchi Day in November. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are bills that move very quickly and are resolutions. But the bigger bills, like the one I just mentioned, that's got to go through a committee.
And, you know, I feel like we're giving a civics class, but that's okay. It's what we do here. What determines if a bill will even make it to, the chamber floor for debate anyway?
The first step always is, and this is in both sides, both watching the House Speaker where I'm sitting, and then across the state capitol, seeing what the Lieutenant Governor who presides over the state Senate, what committee they send the bill to. Mm-hmm. And then you watch what that committee does. So, for example, we're, you know, over in the Education's Committee, they're, as you mentioned, Martha's following, you know, the consideration, what do you do about literacy rates in the state of Georgia? And you expect legislation may come out of that. You follow that legislation. The first step is if a bill gets a hearing in a committee, that's always the first step. If you don't even see that, it's not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere.
And then once it gets a hearing and it gets out of that committee, it goes to the Rules Committee, which puts it on the calendar. And we're just now starting to see those Rules Committee. The House Rules Committee is going to meet for the first time tomorrow. Senate Rules Committee has been meeting for a few days. They put it on the calendar, and that's when it gets a full vote on the House floor the Senate floor.
Earlier this year, the governor said he wants to look at some zoning reforms to address affordable housing. I believe he said that at this year's Eggs and Issues Breakfast. Has there been any movement? Is there a measure out there that might get some consideration here?
So here's what's going on. This is kind of a two-parter. First, in the governor's budget, there's $35 million of money that's been given, that's going to be given to like local development authorities and local counties to help, you know, whether it's land for workforce housing. Okay, that's what's the only hard proposal that's out there. Mm-hmm. Here's the interesting thing. When he did his State of the State address right here in the House chamber, he said that, and I'm doing this, I don't remember the exact words, but it was, I'm looking for solutions from outside this chamber. What his staff told me later was, what they're referring to is local governments coming up with solutions mm-hmm. on affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and you've had so many great conversations with local mayors and county commissioners about what to do about affordable housing. That's where the governor's looking right now. But back here in this building, there are absolutely lawmakers who want to do something about affordable housing, want to do something about corporations who are building neighborhoods for rent with single family homes, who want to do something about corporations who are coming in, buying up homes in neighborhoods and then turning around and renting them. There are absolutely things that lawmakers here want to mm-hmm. do. But as for the governor, he's looking to local governments for those solutions.
And there's legislation in the works that targets district attorneys. What's this about?
This is something that's really getting my interest. This is something that's jumped out at me because, and here's the bigger context. The bigger context, and my coworker Sam Greenglass has talked about this, is district attorneys who may not be prosecuting abortion, or district attorneys who that some Republican lawmakers believe are not tough enough on crime. And so lawmakers here are starting to look. So one example is House Bill 48, which would make district attorney elections nonpartisan. That's one of the bills that's jumped out to me. Senate Bill 31, which is actually on the Senate floor tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Would give, and you guys have heard this before, mm-hmm. would give original jurisdiction to domestic terrorism cases, it would give for domestic terrorism cases to the GBI. You guys may remember last year, mm-hmm. the GBI was given original jurisdiction of election cases. You wonder if this is where this is going, where original jurisdictions for more cases are going to be given to the GBI.
Yeah, that is Senate Bill 11 coming to the floor tomorrow.
On the Senate floor tomorrow, wow. Senate Bill 31, and I know I've got a few of these, making a district attorney pay certain reimbursements to the attorney general if the attorney general has to take over a case, and something that's not a bill yet, but we've heard lawmakers talk about and have been asked about, is what about oversight mm-hmm. of district attorneys, a commission to oversee.
Well, but and Governor Kemp, that's interesting, Raul, because Governor Kemp has been one of those governors who said, I don't want to go in and try to tell, you know, municipalities and other areas how to do business, you know, and we want to have, you know, less control or oversight. But this is very interesting. But when it comes to this area, this is one they may be willing to have a different movement in. That's
so far, I think where the governor is going with this is maybe bail bond reform. Mm-hmm. That may be another thing. That was something that you heard him talk about, not about legislation, but talking about how bail bond is handled here in the state of Georgia.
Now, meanwhile, lawmakers are still working through the budget proposal. Any highlights from the agency heads making their case? I know everybody wants money, which, you know, is probably fair.
Yeah, it is. You know, we had a hearing just today where the Department of Driver Services commissioner was talking about, you know, the $5,000 raise helped, but there's still the challenges. Probably the biggest challenge is when you look at all agencies is turnover, employee turnover, raising salaries. I think, and you see that lawmakers up here realize that you're going to have to raise salaries, not just because of inflation, but because of competition. You know, at some point, low inflation is a challenge, and you have state agencies trying to hang on to people. As for the movement on the budget, we're going to have a significant amount of movement tomorrow mm-hmm. as the House Full Appropriations Committee, the Budget Committee, is going to take up the amended budget. Now, that's the budget that the state of Georgia is currently in right now mm-hmm. and runs through the end of June. That budget is going to be taken up by the committee. I would expect by the end of the week, we're going to have a vote on that budget here in the House before it's sent over to the Senate. Mm-hmm.
And before I let you go, today is a runoff election for the former seat of the late House Speaker David Ralston. We should have those. It shouldn't take a long time to find out who wins. But remind our listeners who are the two candidates.
So the two candidates who made it to the runoff are Sheree Ralston, who is the widow of the late Speaker David Ralston, along with her fellow Republican Johnny Chastain. For their district, which includes Gilmer, Fannin, and parts of Dawson counties, there are also three other special elections across the state, two in Southwest Georgia, mm-hmm. and then one for parts of Barrow and Jackson counties. So we've got some vacancies to fill up here at the Capitol.
All right. WABE politics reporter Raul Bali, live from the Georgia House Chamber. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Always great to be on.
All right, now.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And Closer Look continues from WABE here in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Commissioners in DeKalb County recently passed some legislation to combat a growing public safety concern, and it's related to video surveillance ordinances that will require convenience stores and what's considered high-risk businesses to own and operate a video surveillance system. Joining me now is DeKalb County Commissioner Lorraine Cochran-Johnson, who pushed for the measure, and she joins me. Thanks for taking time. I really appreciate it. Been a long time.
No. Thank you.
Let's begin here, because I actually got an email on this. Someone said, Rose, what exactly is considered a, quote, high-risk business? Good question.
That is a very good question. And for DeKalb County, in order to move forward with legislation that would allow us to have the ability to extend it beyond just our gas and convenience stores, we defined a high-risk business as any business that has a violent crime occur on site, any bodily injury or harm, as well as a business that receives three calls for police servicing during the course of any 30-day period.
That was my next question. How are you all going to determine? And you could have some business saying, well, are you profiling us? But you're saying, look, we're going to keep track of how many times we have to come visit y'all.
Absolutely. We are using the data because we find a direct correlation between outcomes and calls. And if you are calling for police services or there's multiple requests from the community at your location, then you move to the category of a high-risk business.
Have you had some pushback, I imagine, from either the chamber or another coalition of other businesses? What's the feedback been like so far?
Amazingly, Rose, it has been all positive. Because, of course, when it comes to video surveillance and equipment, there are fees. But what we have found, because it's very unfortunate, but in certain census tracts, there is a pattern of criminal activity. So many of the gas and service stations where we have had the greatest incidents of crime, they are looking for solutions too, because they have a fiduciary responsibility to provide for the safety of their patrons. So honestly, the conversation has been more about what can we do to help you help us so that we provide a safe environment, because for some stations, it was beginning to affect their sales. People do not want to stop after dark or during certain periods or at certain gas and service stations because of known incidents of crime.
And we should note, you're talking about working surveillance cameras and video monitors, because there have been some times where folks, I know, because I covered this, where, well, we didn't have the tape, or it wasn't unplugged, or we didn't have the service to monitor it. You all saying, just don't have some cameras up there. Make sure they're working.
Yes, and more importantly, there's guidelines. And, you know, that's the thing here. You know, I have gone to service stations after there was a shooting and looked at footage. And you know there's a death because there is a body in the parking lot and there is still crime scene tape. Mm-hmm. So there's no question of what's occurred. But when you look at the footage, it tells you very little more than you already knew because of the cloudiness of the footage, the poor quality. So it was bigger than creating an ordinance. It was creating an environment where the footage actually becomes an asset to mm-hmm. our police department. So, of course, we now regulate the amount of pixels, 4 megapixels, 40 frames per minute. Mm-hmm. We regulate the storage. You must hold and store footage for a minimum of 60 days. If there is an incident of crime or footage is requested, it must be surrendered within 72 hours. Your video surveillance must be active 24 hours a day, 7 days per week. Of course, we do also require cameras at points of entry and exit, mm-hmm. the gas pumps, and point of sale.
What about for unincorporated DeKalb? Because you all have had to have some additional resources for this area, correct?
I represent, in terms of legislation, the unincorporated part of DeKalb. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have 12 municipalities, and I can say that the city of Tucker, as well as the city of Decatur, have reached out, and I've shared the actual final draft legislation, because what we deal with here is an isolated, to DeKalb, you see crime and violence at gas and service stations in Atlanta, in Gwinnett, and other counties as well. So the key for us is doing what we can to minimize mm-hmm. What we see and create safe environments.
Okay, well, here comes the other question. There's perhaps a business saying, do I have a deadline? And what happens if I'm not exactly ready for this, or I don't have these surveillance cameras? Not trying to get anybody in trouble, but you know, mm-hmm. there are consequences.
Absolutely. And that just means you don't get a business license. This becomes effective, I believe it's the latter part of April. And by that time, all gas and service stations must have proper video surveillance that meets the minimum requirements in place. We are actually hiring 5 new code enforcement officers who are dedicated specifically to visiting in DeKalb County. I believe it's 268 gas and service stations to ensure that video surveillance equipment is in place, that it meets our minimum requirements. And after your initial certification, which you need to get the business license, then thereafter, with the renewal of your business license, you can provide an affidavit.
Well, let's back up for a moment just to make sure, because I've got a couple of emails in here. So you're saying now, if you're not a convenience store or gas station, but you are a high risk because of all this extra activity that's happening at your place, you will be required. But what if
Absolutely.
someone said, well, you know, can you define, okay, if the police come out because there's folks arguing or there's folks just hanging around, is there an assessment used for what type of activity is happening at this location? Because someone would say, look, yeah, I have kids, or not just kids, I don't get email. I have folks hanging out, they may, you know, but they're not doing anything. Does that mean I have to get this high-tech surveillance, you know, camera system here?
Absolutely. And, you know, folk tend to look for the gray area, but we're very specific. If we get 3 calls in DeKalb County for police servicing at your location, then we now consider you a high-risk business. And, you know, I would hope that business owners would embrace this, mm-hmm. because in all honesty, it is a small price to pay, because you should want to send the message from your location that if you break the law, we are going to apprehend you quickly. And, in surrounding municipalities, when you have seen clear footage mm-hmm. of murders and crime, and we're able to put your face out there, we're able to often arrest within 72 hours. So justice has to be swift. So we get 3 calls. I don't care what your excuse. You're under the surveillance ordinance now.
I have a listener who says, does this also mean if I'm next to an establishment that gets, and these are fair questions, is you know, because look, this what happens when you come on a program. Does this, what if my business is next to an establishment that always has issues? And then they say, well, we always good.
Well, we, as long as it's not on your site, you know, hopefully you want us to secure that location and get it under control. But no, it's not a transferred responsibility. We're not going to walk next door and say they have a problem, so do you. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave the problem with whom it lies.
All right. And Commissioner, before I let you go, I know that you have some legislative priorities that you want the General Assembly to look at for your DeKalb delegation. Let's go through a couple of them first. What's at the top of mind for you?
Oh, wow. Top of mind, and for me, simple, we need independent redistricting commissions in the state of Georgia. As we all know, and as we saw, of course, every 10 years during the census, we assess populations and there is reapportionment for districts. And what we have seen out of the General Assembly is that it is an inherently biased process that has more to do about securing one's interest than the proper redistricting based upon population. So currently there are 8 states that have redistricting commissions. They've taken the power away from the General Assembly. These individuals come together, they strictly look at the population and they draw boundaries that are compact, contiguous, and make sense. So that's one of my pieces that I'm promoting.
And also, too, you're talking about, and listen, everyone is housing, obviously, and you might have heard with segment with Raul that perhaps Governor Kemp is going to be able to, but his, in terms of a housing affordability, will be in terms of housing for, you know, workers. But for DeKalb County, I imagine that it goes beyond that for you all and what assistance you would need.
And Rose, that you're very right, because I did present a request to the General Assembly. There's two things that need to happen here. In 2021, Metro Atlanta saw a 21% increase in rental rates. And in 2022, we saw a 15%. So over the past 2 years, the average person that rents has seen a 36% increase in rental rates. What you have happening here, and with those rates, let me say that it placed Georgia in the top 10 for highest rental rates across the country. Out of the top 10, 6 of the other states currently have a rental rate cap. And with a rental rate cap, that means that year over year, rental rates cannot increase more than 4.5 to 5%. But here in Georgia, we're seeing 15 to literally 21% increases.
That's challenging, Commissioner, you know, because and not just for the big apartment complexes, but even the privately owned, the landlords say, look, you know, we have to adjust. They say we have to adjust the rent based on the market. We have to adjust the rent based on perhaps property taxes. If I own a 4 rental, you know, units in a building, my property taxes, I am forced to pass that on to my tenants. You've heard that.
Oh, yes. And let me say, as a part of the governing authority of DeKalb County, you don't see rises in taxes that would justify the things that we're seeing. And it's alarming. And of course, there's a totally different emergence of what's called the BFR community, the buy for rent, where now individuals who seek to purchase a home aren't competing against other individuals. They're competing against LLCs, Wall Street, and private investors. Yeah. And that is a totally different piece of this puzzle.
Well, in legislation, there could be legislation that deals with that state lawmakers might want to consider. I know in each municipality, there may be some local measures in terms of keeping investor businesses from coming in. And look, in some instances, having whole subdivisions and whole, you know, blocks and blocks of rental units. I want to get this in there before I let you go, because tomorrow we know that your CEO, Michael Thurman, and Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens are planning some type of press conference where they're going to talk about you know, ensuring the safety for the community around the Atlanta Public Safety Training Center. Should they have, through your lens, should this have been done some time ago as now? Because unfortunately, there's been a death. Someone has been killed and all the things that have been happening with that. Is it a little bit late? Shouldn't all this have been worked out before?
You know, it is so interesting, Rose, that you would ask that question.
Now, you know me.
I do. And you know me. And because you know me, I'm going to say I was made aware at 12:09 through a press release that this conversation would take place. So unfortunately, I cannot with any degree of intelligence speak as to the resolutions or what this conversation looks like. But I will say that even this Sunday on the Georgia gang, hearing Phil sit there and say, and I'm sure you were watching too, you know, a conversation should
have been had. Are you about to quote Phil Kent?
You know it. See, yes, you know, Phil Kent said, you know, it was time for a conversation, for CEO to have the conversation. And I do agree. And, you know, let me say, I believe in securing rights for people. I'm that person who will fight for you, fight with you, and I will fight you if you're wrong, but I won't put it out there. But it will be a conversation. But also, you know, when you fail to act, there's consequences. And this has gone on for too long. You know, people identifying themselves as tree watchers that are trespassers. And also talking about the environmental issues that. So I'm looking forward to the resolution and hearing what has been agreed upon. And I sincerely hope that, you know, you can't go back, but we can go forward.
Well, what lesson is learned then? Obviously, we can't go back and we can't bring back the individual that was killed. We can't bring back what happened to the mm-hmm. state trooper that was shot and is recuperating. But what lessons do you think can be learned as it relates to how DeKalb County did business in that property?
You know, one thing that I can say is when you don't have critical conversations, you deal with critical issues. So having the conversation, because there's been an outcry from the community, I will not say that everything that certain members of the community express is an accurate representation of the facts. However, the conversation is just long overdue. Mm-hmm. So being quicker to act.
DeKalb County Commissioner Lorraine Cochran Johnson, thank you so much for taking time. I appreciate it. We will have a link to the ordinance for your DeKalb County folks who still emailing me talking about, why should I get a video? Because we'll say, why should I get a video? My company's good. Well, I got to do with that, y'all. You talk to the commissioner.
Oh, no, but make sure they know that if you don't have, you know, a violent crime or you're not a gas or service station, it doesn't affect you. Just make sure you keep criminal elements out, and we're here to help with that.
High-risk businesses. You know who you are.
High-risk businesses. You know who you are. Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
And Closer Look will continue in just a moment. You'll hear how legendary filmmaker Spike Lee is partnering with the Atlanta University Center institutions with a new fellowship opportunity for film students. So you'll learn about that in just a moment. But first this, it was a year ago, state and local leaders, along with major Atlanta-based businesses and others, formed a partnership to help combat human trafficking here in our state. Now, to mark this 1 year of collaboration, Georgia First Lady Marti Kemp, along with others, spoke from Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. The First Lady indicated new legislation will be introduced with the focus on traffickers.
Traffickers are constantly adapting and depending on their ability to hide in plain sight in crowds like the ones that fill these terminals each day. That is why it is so important that we work to educate the public on the signs of trafficking and what they can do to stop them. This year, we're adding a piece of legislation that will increase penalties for those required to post information and resources on human trafficking but fail to do so. Victims are dependent on everyone to do their part, and we must hold each other accountable to ensure we are meeting those demands.
Now, last August, FBI and 9 Atlanta area police departments rescued 28 minors, 9 of which were reportedly being exploited for sex. 4 suspects were arrested. And also, filmmaker Tyler Perry was working with the governor's office to produce a new PSA to alert people about the signs of human trafficking. Georgia's Attorney General Chris Carr says within the last year, 116 human trafficking victims have been rescued and given assistance. Nearly 50 defendants are currently under indictments for sex and labor trafficking. This is Closer Look. We're back in a moment. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. In 2015, filmmaker Spike Lee received the Governor's Award from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. He was presented the annual, they usually present the annual Oscars. Now, Spike's work was celebrated for a lifetime of not just making movies and documentaries. The award was presented by his buddy Samuel L. Jackson, fellow Morehouse man like Spike, Wesley Snipes, and Denzel Washington.
Spike Lee has put more African Americans to work in this business than anyone else in the history of this business.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
The trio also talked about the type of movie Spike Lee makes.
Spike makes films that are very personal to Spike, that he hopes an audience will embrace. But
you really think you care?
I mean, he wants you to like his films and he wants you to embrace them in a way, but he tells stories and he tells them in a way that he doesn't really embrace the fact of people's feelings being hurt.
Now, I know y'all have seen Spike Lee movies. I've seen every Spike Lee movie. Now, his filmography spans decades, obviously, with some award-winning movies, too, like, of course, Malcolm X and Defy Bloods. Now he's investing in the next generation of filmmakers through a fellowship with Atlanta's HBCUs. Lee says the mission is to, quote, bring as many black and brown folks with me in front and behind the camera, close quote. Well, the Atlanta University Center Consortium says they are thrilled to launch this opportunity for aspiring movie makers and not public radio hosts who want to make movies. But let's welcome in the studio executive director of the consortium, Michael Hodge, writer, filmmaker, and Morehouse professor, Dr. Stephanie Dunn. Welcome.
Thank you, Rose. Thanks for having us.
Name your favorite Spike Lee movie, Professor Dunn.
Oh my God, don't make me do that. It might be Do the Right Thing, but it's in a war with Malcolm X.
Ah.
So,
Mr. Hodge, what about you?
She's Gotta Have It.
You like that one?
I like that. Was mind changing for me back then.
I bet it was. It was. I like them all. I mean, you know, I do the right thing because I was of that area. I was young and trying to find my way and a little militant. That's okay. Still, you know, and Spike was speaking directly to me and my generation about things that were happening. Yeah, it was New York, but we were all familiar with that. So yeah, love them all. Spike, look, he's a proud Morehouse grad, class of 79, wrote and directed and produced his first film back in 1983. He always talks about the importance of Professor Eichelberger and so many others in the HBCU experience, which of course he put on film. What is it about having him involved with this fellowship that's so important?
Well, I think one of the things that's so important is that it is collaborative. It sort of acknowledges the culture of the AUC. The culture of the AUC really does nurture creativity. It nurtures the vision of people like Spike Lee. So that the fact that this will be Morehouse, Clark, Spelman students getting mm-hmm. this opportunity really speaks to how the colleges in the AUC themselves have a number of talented students who really need access.
Mr. Hodge, what about you? What do you think?
So, yeah, it's very important that, you know, Spike came to us and opened up this opportunity for our students. So the Atlanta University Center Consortium is there to make an impact that's greater than any one of those colleges could make by themselves. So we bring them together with collaboration. And Spike sort of epitomizes that in this fellowship that he brought together. He made sure that all of the students came to this dinner from all of the schools and made this, you know, big grand announcement. And there's a lot of nice components to this program.
Let's talk about it, because these Spike Fellows, and I love that. I'd love to have that on a shirt. I'm a Spike Fellows. These Spike Fellows, it will be more than just, you know, funding, but this allows them to do so much.
I think it does. The working with Gersh, big company, they will have the opportunity to be in New York or L.A. and actually work with these people, not just in front of cameras, you know, acting and all of that, but the business of entertainment, learning that business. So it's open to all majors, not just film folks, but, you know, we're going to start there. some people who have an interest in film, right? And there's a lot of our folks that do that. So it's gonna make a difference, and they're going to do this, complete it well, and they get up to $25,000 of their student debt paid off.
Wow.
Yes.
Where's my nephew?
Where was this when we were in school? Yeah. That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Because I know there are folks saying, let me text my son, let me text my daughter. Of course, they all know about this. How, there is a cap. You can't take everybody. So how will you, you know, do you want to go ahead and say it, or?
So there's the cap is, if I believe correctly, 5 students initially, and it's going to be by a sort of committee selection. There is supposed to be participation by representatives from the campus and Spike Lee to select those students. So no, it is not a free-for-all. It is definitely a selective process, as it always is when you have a limited number of students you can take, you know, per year, per program. So that's unfortunately.
So they all won't be from Morehouse, they all won't be from Spelman, they all won't be from Clark.
No, ma'am.
But how exciting is this in terms of just even the applicants, the obviously the what you're seeing in terms of the response?
It's tremendous. Mentorship is so crucial. And by the way, I want to give Spike Lee props, because even though this is a formal program, he's been doing this for years. Mm-hmm. We have students in the Morehouse Cinema, Television, and Emerging Media Studies department who have been nurtured and mentored by Spike Lee at NYU, who have left Morehouse. They've gone there. But this is really exciting to have a formal program that will breed other mentors in the industry. And that kind of access is so difficult. And so that's what's exciting, I think.
When you look at, obviously every year there's some issue, big or small, as relates to the Academy Awards. And there was a little bit of drama this year as well. And I think warranted. That's just my opinion. But also, to creating that next pipeline, Mr. Hodge, when you think of creatives, you know, Spike will tell you, look, it wasn't easy. You know, I thought I was going to be this overnight sensation because he had won, a student film contest, and it took him a while.
It takes time. It takes time to build greatness, right? And so this is an opportunity, though, for our students to be on the front row of greatness and witness it themselves. And to really, it's not going to be easy. I mean, it's not going to be go to this place and, you know, put paper in this file. Yeah. That's not going to be it. They're going to be worked. They're going to be worked hard. That's why this first round is for graduating seniors only. Mm-hmm. So that they have the Morehouse Spelman Clark preparation.
Will they have to already have a project that they're working on, or will it be from conception of a script all the way through, or any type of film and video production here? Documentary, movie, what have you.
Any type of that, or on the business side, being an agent, representation, all of that is possible with Gersh.
And Professor Dunn, will they be able to come back and say, I may need some help here? Who will be the people that were working with them in terms
absolutely.
Of?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. From the consortium side, but also from the individual institutional side, there will be collaborative sort of effort to make sure that students are successful. So this is about access. So it's about widening the doorway so that from their undergraduate through their entryway. That's why the focus on seniors, so they get this opportunity because they're about to come out and try to make their way. And so this is a bridge that's happening.
You mentioned you're going to take 5, but with the success of this, I'm going to go ahead and say it, next year y'all going to take 10, or after this is over, can y'all take 10? There's a lot of pressure.
Well, I always like to say that at the beginning of something, it's always sort of a pilot. Yeah. Right? It's the pilot years. And so you see how it goes and you learn from what works and, you know, what doesn't work, and then you make adjustments as necessary. So I think that's a good safe answer without committing, you know, overly much, maybe.
When you look at the role of HBCUs and the making of and I sound like Henry Louis Gates, Making Black America. I'm actually going to do a forum about this in a couple of weeks. But the importance of HBCUs in this nation and in our achievements that we have as people of color, as black folks, and who we produce out of these HBCUs.
Well, that's why it's so problematic. You mentioned the Oscars. It's not just another passing year where you go, okay, Oscars so white. It is deeply problematic that black women were locked out, right, on the director side and on the acting side, because it's the representation mm-hmm. of the continuing problem, right, of a sort of exclusive club that Hollywood is. And I'm always saying to people, don't sleep and get excited every time two people are of color or black folk are nominated for an award, because things come in phases. And we want transformation of the industry, not every 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, we're having the same Oscar so white conversation.
Mr. Hodgman, she talks about this transformation, and it's been a process. I think, and I'm not aging y'all, but we're all old enough to remember when there was a time we looked on TV, we didn't see a whole lot of folks that looked like us. We were all excited for some when they saw Julia. You know, now I wasn't around yet, but my goodness, I know when Sanford Sun came on and the Jeffersons and Good Times and of that nature, that was a big deal because representation, as you said, matters. And you saw folks that looked like you, and you saw storylines about your community, where it was Cooley High, which everybody loves. You know, was it Cornbread Earl and Me?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Claudine.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
So yeah, these are, and I am old enough to remember seeing Julia.
So I didn't want to put you out there like that.
But these are very important points that you make, that diversity actually does matter. And it's not that it just matters because it makes you feel good or people see you for this transaction that's happening. But she said it's transformational. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that this diversity is represented, because it represents the strength of America.
When is the deadline? Have you all begun to look at the applications or?
No, windows opening February 1, which is
tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Do you want to give any, are you allowed to give any tips or suggestions to what you're looking for, or you want to leave that alone?
Complete the application as directed and thoughtfully.
Say that, because I say that a lot to my nephew.
Yeah, you gotta complete the thing. You know, go look at it
as directed.
And then push submit doesn't work. You gotta fill it out
and thoughtfully.
And then we'll come back, and the students who are chosen, the few that will be interviewed. Gersh will be here interviewing.
There's a process.
There is a process that should wrap up in March, I think we said. Wow. And then they'll know who's going to go to New York or California.
And when will Spike make the announcement? How will this be rolling
out? Hope so.
That's a good question.
I would hope so.
Spike?
Rose Scott has asked, will you make the announcement, please, as would be fitting?
I have a funny Spike Lee story.
Tell us.
I was doing basketball. I was for the radio with Clark Atlanta and Morehouse. It was a basketball game. And we interviewed Spike during halftime. And I asked him, I said, Spike, I need you to make a movie about the three women that played in the Negro Leagues. And he said, not before I tell Jackie's story. I said, well, we know Jackie's story, but you got to do something about the three women that played in the Negro Leagues. And he said, maybe. And I said, what do you mean, maybe? And he said to me, you do it. And he was right. He was right to say that. You do it. Now I don't have Spike Lee funding, but, you know, that's my Spike Lee story. Yeah.
And when you want to make that film, I'm a filmmaker and a writer, so let's do that thing.
All right. Did you know there were three women that played in the Negro
Leagues? I did.
Yeah, okay.
And yes, indeed.
And you knew that too, Mr. Hodge, right?
I know it now. No, I did not know that. It was
Mr. Hodge, really?
I did not. Right, I'll be honest. I'm transparent here.
All right. Well, that's what we're going to do. So we're going to make this movie?
Now, see, she thinks I'm talking, but Dr. Hodge can tell you.
I know that. Now, you met, and look, she'll be calling you.
What is the final, and again, it's going to be these five, but with these five young folks, these students, these
graduating seniors from the AUC and what they're about to embark on. I'm so excited for them. I mean, it's really not about quantity. I mean, just think about one Spike Lee and how he has changed and contributed to the American cultural front.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, let me just say that these students, when they came to that dinner with Spike Lee and he asked them to go around and talk, mm-hmm. oh my goodness, these young people are so bright, so deep, so talented, so enthusiastic. They are true creatives in all senses of the word, whether business or film. This is going to be great.
Maybe I'll get one of them to do the movie about the three women that played in the Negro Leagues.
They can work for us. It's important for two black women to continue. Black women to.
Hello. I like that.
Hello.
And then, yes, ma'am.
Executive Director of the Atlanta University Center Consortium, Mr. Michael Hodge, and writer, filmmaker, and Morehouse Professor, Dr. Stephanie Dunn. Thank you both for taking time. We appreciate it. Let us know when the five are announced. We would love to just talk to them briefly.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rose. Right. Thank you for having us.
And that's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are LaShawn Hudson, Daniel Razel, Pat St. Clair. Our supervising producer is Tiffany Griffith. Our engineer is Kevin Rinker. A reminder to let us know your thoughts on today's program. Do not email me about how to get your son or daughter selected. I don't have that pool. But I've got two emails already. I love it. But send me an email, rose@wabe.org. And of course, if you missed any of this, it will be broadcast tonight at 7 p.m. as well as on our website, wabe.org/closerlook. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE from Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. We'll have a link. You can go to AUCC website?
AUCenter.edu.
AUCenter.edu. All right. Good luck, everybody.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.